Counsel in Gregory v. Creekstone, 173168. Okay, Mr. Johnson.
May it please the court. I'm John W. Johnson. I represent the appellant in this case, Phyllis Gregory, and I'm here with my co-counsel, Diane Sorensen. This case arises out of the district court in Wichita granting summary judgment on a wrongful death claim involving an individual truck driver who had delivered a load of cattle to the defendant's beef processing facility in Arkansas City. And while he was inside the processing facility assisting the employee that was moving the cattle being unloaded from the truck, was trampled by either one or more cows and was killed.
Mr. Johnson, do you mind pulling that mic a little closer? Will it extend? Or if you can just speak up a little bit.
I'll try to do better here.
Okay.
The defendant filed a motion for summary judgment, and the court granted that motion on the basis that there was no duty owed by the defendant to the plaintiff, because as a premises liability matter, the court indicated that this risk of harm was open and obvious to Mr. Gates, and therefore there was no duty owed to him by Creekstone. We obviously made allegations of negligence in our petition, and we indicated through our expert agricultural engineer that not only was there a design defect in the facility itself, but there was negligence in the handling of these cows as they were being unloaded. The employee, a person by the name of Jeremy Irvin, had been working there for approximately 10 years, maybe a little more than 10 years. And he was supervised by an individual by the name of Butch Fulton. And Mr. Irvin was a big man. He was 5'10", and he weighed 510 pounds. He was good size. And Butch Fulton testified that he trained Mr. Irvin not to allow the truck drivers into the receiving pens. And the court, and I can't tell you the document number, but there is an exhibit which we just replaced with a better color exhibit. The appellee made that motion. But what the receiving pens look like is that there are two unloading docks. The trucks back up to those docks, and they pull the gate up and let the cows walk into what's called a receiving pen, and there's a gate at the other end of those receiving pens. Once those cows are in the receiving pen, then the gate is opened, and there's a 90-degree turn to the left that they go down a walkway into what's called holding pens. And there are individual holding pens for each load of cattle that comes in. The cattle go into the holding pens waiting to go through the slaughter procedure. On the day in question, or the night in question, because these activities go on between 11 p.m. and 5 a.m., and just one employee handles the receiving and moving of these cattle, and that's Mr. Irvin. Mr. Irvin had been told by another employee, Casey Phillips, that he needed help in doing his job. Mr. Irvin agreed that he did need help, but he never did anything about it.
Why does that matter? Because let's say that he needed help or not, and with regard to the lack of warning, because there's no question that Mr. Gates knew that cows were dangerous. And so even if, and this may be going back a little bit to what you had started with in your argument, even if there had been or were not a warning not to allow the truck drivers to get into the receiving pens, it really doesn't matter in this particular case with regard to the lack of a warning, because Mr. Gates knew that if he got into a receiving pen, he's going to be face-to-face with a cow that's very dangerous.
Well, and that's a very good question. That's a very good point. And that's really the whole point of the defendant's argument in this case, is that this was an open and obvious situation that doesn't require, you know, a duty of care by Creekstone to Mr. Gates. However, the fallacy in that argument is that Butch Fulton recognized that being in that receiving pen was a risk, and it was a risk to not only his own employee, but it was a risk to the truck drivers. And the way that these pens are designed is there's what's called a handler alley between them. And per Butch Fulton's instructions and training to Mr. Urban, he was not to get out of that handler alley. He was not to get into the receiving pen because, in his own words, it's dangerous. It's too risky to get in there. Therefore, he trained him not to get in there. He also trained him not to allow truck drivers to get in there because it was dangerous for the truck drivers and it increased the risk to get in there with these cows in that contained area. So what we have here is a foreseeability of harm to an invitee to the business, even though it's open and obvious. Creekstone recognized that there was a risk of harm to the truck drivers if they got into that receiving pen.
Let me play devil's advocate with you, counsel. Now, with regard to foreseeability, and I'm not really sure which part of the argument, if you're tying this to the argument about the exception F to the open and obvious doctrine, I'm not sure foreseeability gets you as far as you want. Because as I understand comment F, it requires more than foreseeability. It requires a recognition that there may be individuals that will voluntarily confront an open and obvious danger because they see the advantages of unilaterally embarking on that dangerous conduct to outweigh the risk. And what I don't understand from the evidence here on summary judgment is, what evidence would allow a reasonable inference that Mr. Gates would have known that the advantages of getting into the receiving pen would outweigh the risk? There's no evidence that Urban was taking too long, that he was having any trouble on this particular night in question of getting the cattle moved. Urban was in the handler alley. I've never understood why Mr. Gates decided to get into the receiving pen in the first place if he was going to help. Why didn't he get behind Urban in the handler alley? But all that being said, what evidence is there to support an argument about comment F, the exception?
Well, first of all, there's more to comment F under that, because what it says is that if the possessor has reason to expect that the invitee will nevertheless suffer harm, such reason to expect harm to the visitor from known or obvious dangers may arise. For example, where the possessor has reason to expect that the invitee's attention may be distracted, one, so that he will not discover what is obvious, that's one, or will forget what he has discovered, that is two, or fail to protect himself against it. Three, fail to protect himself against it. And what evidence we have in here, and this is where on a summary judgment motion where the facts have to be construed in favor of the non-moving party and all inferences have to be in favor of the non-moving party, this goes back to the prior conduct of Mr. Urban, and as our expert testified, that his conduct in ignoring his training and instructions from Mr. Fulton by allowing truck drivers to come in, and it says they did it on a regular basis. They came in there and they helped him. That he would not always, he would not use the handler alley. He would get into the receiving pen behind the cattle, and that on this particular occasion, they moved two loads of cattle because when Mr. Gates got there, both pens were full, and you know they moved cattle from the west pen, and then they were moving cattle from the east pen, and that's when this accident happened. But that, you know, over a period of time, truck drivers were getting in there to help him, and the inference is that he needed help. His own employee said he needed help. He agreed he needed help. The truck drivers evidently agreed that he needed help, and therefore they got in there and they were helping him.
Had there been any other incidents similar to this in the history of this operation?
Any other incidents?
Yeah, any history of truck drivers being getting in the pen and getting run over?
Well, not run over, no. We don't have any...
All right, and your Mr. Gates could not say why the animal that caused the injury had turned around and come back.
Well, the inference that the reason that the animal turned around and came back was because of the blind alley.
Well, but Mr. Gates said specifically he could not offer an opinion on that.
Well, but they were bunched up, and that's what he indicated was that this blind alley...
I thought he said that he could not offer an opinion that the cows had bunched up because of the blind alley.
Well...
But in any event, this gentleman who was injured, or killed, I guess, had years of experience with cattle, didn't he?
He did. He had years of experience.
And anybody driving. Who's been around a feedlot knows you don't jump into the pen.
Well, feedlot is different than a processing plant. A feedlot is an open area.
Well, I couldn't tell what exactly this farm, Creekstone Farms premium beef, was.
It's a processing plant.
And so it's just a slaughterhouse?
It's a slaughterhouse.
It? Okay.
And these cows are going into these confined pens, and that's why it's designed with a handler alley to keep the employees out of the receiving pen. They're not supposed to be in the receiving pen at all,
right.
Period. And so Creekstone recognized that. Butch Fulton recognized that and told Jeremy Urban, don't let the truck drivers in there.
Well, was this the first time that Mr. Gregory had ever been to this place?
No, he had been there before.
Well.
But he had never been instructed or told that he couldn't help this guy. And that's why we believe this falls squarely under comment F, because they foresaw that. And then they took action, telling that they foresaw the risk of harm, and they instructed their employees, because of that risk of harm, increased risk of harm, to keep the truck drivers out of it.
Well, don't you have to show under F a known or obvious danger?
Well,
I mean, anybody, unless you're saying that they become an insurer against the injuries to any person that might get near these cattle. And I don't think they're all cows, are they?
They were what?
They're not all cows.
No, they were yeah. Fattened cattle.
Right.
I mean, these were big they were ready for slaughter, which, you know, they weighed 1,500 pounds. So
unless you want an absolute insurance on that nobody can get hurt, period, why wouldn't an experienced cattle person know that you don't get into the pen with a lot of cattle?
With all due respect, Your Honor, you're making an assumption that Mr. Gates had been trained and had knowledge of moving cattle inside a processing facility. Yes, he loaded cattle onto his truck, and he unloaded cattle off his truck. He moved them, you know, he had them out in the pasture, and he moved them around in feedlots, but this is a completely different situation. This is a confined area, and this is an area where people were restricted to be. They were told not to be in that area. Mr. Gates was never told that. Jeremy Irvin was. And, you know, Irvin over the years, and in fact, Irvin testified he was never told that by Butch Fulton. So we have a contradiction in testimony between Irvin and his supervisor. So that puts Mr. Irvin's testimony and its credibility into question as to what happened there at the time of the accident, because he said he didn't see it, and he says he was at a certain place, and so whether or not that's true, we don't know, because he's saying, I never was told not to get in there, and I did it all the time, and I allowed the truck drivers to get in there. And so that's why I'm saying this is the classic Common F situation where they...
Okay, I want you to be able to answer Judge Kelly's question, but you're over time, so I want you to wrap up.
Okay.
I mean, you can finish answering his question,
well,
but I don't want you to move on to another topic.
I said this is classic under Common F, that he thought they foreseeable, they knew about it, they instituted a rule, and they failed to follow the rule, and that's where the duty arises.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Betsy, can you give him an extra minute? It was just to give you equal time.
May it please the Court, Your Honors. My name is Patrick Murphy. I represent Creekstone Premium Farms. We're the appellee in this case. I would like to focus my comments on really three issues. Not all of them were addressed in appellant's oral argument. The first one is Creekstone did not owe a duty because this was an open and obvious condition and no exceptions apply. The second issue I'd like to talk about, there are no material issues of fact to preclude summary judgment.
There are what?
There are no genuine issues of material fact to preclude summary judgment. And three, plaintiff's claim is a premises claim. It's not a general negligence claim or a straight negligence claim. I won't focus a lot on the open and obvious because I think that it's... pardon that, but I do think it's obvious that the defect and the condition and the activity in this case were clearly known and obvious to Mr. Gates.
Well, there's two defects that Mr. Gates or Ms. Gregory is alleging, and that is the open and obvious danger with regard to cattle being dangerous, but they also highlight the fact that there was a blind alley at the south end of the east and west receiving pens, and the blind alley, they argue, is not an open and obvious defect. What's your response to that?
I have three responses to that, Your Honor. The issue about the blind alley is essentially that proves exactly what we're arguing on the open and obvious, because the alley itself didn't injure Mr. Gates. It's a condition. It's a wall, essentially, is what that is. And then what impact, what importance does the blind alley have? They must take that step and say, it's blind, the cattle can't see around the corner, so what do? They balk. They back up. And that is the very reason, if you look through the pretrial order and all the allegations in this case, what the plaintiff in this case says is, I was compelled to get in and help Mr. Irvin. He's too large. He's inefficient. The cattle are balking. So I agree with Your Honor. It is a description of two conditions, and the blind alley, they make that a big issue. And they do, in the briefing, talk about, well, it wasn't open and obvious because he didn't know the blind alley existed. But it doesn't matter because the effect of the blind alley is cows in the pen. And he knew about that.
Well, he knew that there were cows in the pen. What he didn't know, at least a reasonable inference from the summary judgment evidence, is that the cattle would get to the south end of the receiving pen and then they would realize that they can't get out and then they will balk and return. And so Mr. Gates did not know that there was a blind alley, and so he didn't fully appreciate the degree of danger that existed once he got into the pen.
I think that's not within the facts, Your Honor, because what this is the pens, which we did substitute a better picture. The gate opens up, and what the expert said, which Judge Kelly, you talked about, the expert doesn't know why the cow turned around. Nobody knows. But what happens is the gate opens up, and if the cattle are turned the opposite direction, if they're wedged in, they can balk, and they can go back the other way. The key issue is there's nothing extra about the reason they balked. There's no allegation that this cow got to the end and because of the blind alley, it bucked. It was more rambunctious. There's nothing additional.
But that's causation. And, you know, and I do frankly think you have a strong causation argument, but that is an issue that was that the district judge did not make. And you all have not briefed causation as an alternative ground for affirmance here. And so I don't know that we can affirm on that ground. So isn't the uncertainty about whether the cattle actually balked and whether that's why Mr. Gates got killed, isn't that an issue that we really can't rely on to alternatively affirm?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because the reason the cattle were there doesn't matter. It goes back to the open and obvious. And it goes to Your Honor's question about the illustration, or it's comment F and illustration number 5. And let me draw the comparison, what I think is equal on that. Illustration number 5 is the office, the wax floor where someone has to walk across the office. The argument, if plaintiff's argument is paralleled, would be, well, now we have to look at, well, why was it waxed? When was the last time it was waxed? How slippery was the wax? Did they give enough time from the wax job until the employee was coming to work? But as shown in illustration number 5, those aren't the germane questions. You simply look at what was the condition and activity. Did he know about it? Yes. The condition in our case is cattle in the pens, and he wants to help move them because this is Kansas, this is Oklahoma. Was he just being helpful? So just like the examination in illustration number 5 doesn't focus on the wax job, and that's what I think the comparison would be to Your Honor's question is, well, we have to look at the reason for the wax. Here we don't have to. We simply have to say there were cattle in the pen. One went back. Did he know about that? Yes, he knew about it, because that's the very argument that they make. Cattle turn around because of the defendant. I then get in. Mr. Irvin is too big. He can't adequately move them. So then I then get in. It goes directly to the open and obvious. And then, Your Honor, I have an answer for, I guess, the rhetorical or hypothetical question. What evidence is there of risk and advantage? Why is the advantage outweigh the risk? Absolutely none. And I think you heard none from the appellant in this case.
But does there have to be a subjective appreciation by that individual undertaking the risk? And let me give you an example that leads me to that question, and that is the Oklahoma Supreme Court, when they dealt with comment F to the open and obvious danger in Wood versus Mercedes-Benz, because there the plaintiff, the woman who was crossing the ice to go get her cell phone, there was no evidence, in at least that was enunciated by the Oklahoma Supreme Court, about whether she knew that she couldn't borrow a phone within the office or why she particularly had to go to her car to retrieve her cell phone. The Oklahoma Supreme Court relied on the fact that the company, the defendant, could reasonably anticipate that if they were catering an event, that someone would cross this ice and voluntarily undertake a danger, much like Mr. Gates would voluntarily undertake a danger, regardless of what his subjective intent was or his subjective appreciation was or was not.
Your Honor, in Wood, I think the issue there, and importantly, I think it's important that we not focus on the dissent, because the dissent talked about, well, she went back. This was on a return trip from the building to her car. But the majority opinion said that the issue is she needed to do it as part of her job. And Underwood, that was a contractual duty for her employer. That's why she needed to go back and forth across the ice. And this, Your Honor, Gates, he didn't have to be in the pen for any reason. And I think it's important to note, he backs his truck up. He's at the west pen. These aren't even his cattle. He's not even going to unload into this pen. This is the east pen. He could have stayed in his truck. He could have stayed outside, in outside the entire building. He could have stayed in the handler alley. If you look in the picture, there's another little barrier of heavy metal pipes. He could have stayed behind that. He could have stayed into the office. And so the difference in Wood is the majority decision there said she was compelled. The court talked about the presence and exposure compelled to further a purpose of the car dealership. They're having catered in, you know, probably hot dogs, and you know, they're going to have customers in. Crossing the ice was required of her employment. That's what the majority found. Here, there's just simply nothing. These cattle of Mr. Gates were going to be unloaded, regardless of what he did. That's the difference. And I have, I guess I have a discussion on all of those. Scales was the grain elevator with rice. And the court there said the slightest slip could injure, where the person is above the pit and there's an auger down at the bottom. And they said, what choice but to quit? Here, Mr. Gates had ample choices, and this goes to again the exception. Why does the exception not apply in comment F, illustration number 5? Because Mr. Gates didn't have to do anything. And so the foreseeability, I agree with the hypothetical proposition by the court that foreseeability means you have to foresee that it's probable, and that's in a case of it's Manley versus Hallbauer, 387P3D185, and that's not included in our brief. But in response to the foreseeability argument by plaintiff in the reply, it is rather than placing the duty on landowners, the rule assumes that people should be able to protect themselves from open and obvious dangers. And it talks about you must have the probability, not just the possibility. And that's why this isn't foreseeable. So the other remaining cases, when we have Wood and we have Martinez, Martinez was the oil case. In each one of those circumstances, it's part of the person's job. He's working on the unprotected oil pump. Mr. Gates simply didn't have to do any of this. He just simply didn't have to do it. And that's why, so we have the rule, which is open and obvious. And I think that's clear. And I can address those issues. But clearly, experienced cattleman. He'd been there multiple times delivering to this. He moves cattle on the ground, unprotected from them. As he loads his truck, as he unloads his truck, and as he walks cattle at feed yards and other locations. There is no meaningful difference in this. This is just an interior corral.
Let me ask you about, you know, this argument that you've been addressing as far as whether or not there was no requirement as part of his job to get out and help Mr. Irvin. Again, with the backdrop that this is under the summary judgment standard, he did have to get back to work, right? And I mean,
he was done. He's dropping.
Okay, is there anything in the briefing or at least to us that addresses that?
I think that's in our statement of facts, Your Honor, where he's done. He's dropping.
And that's part of the summary judgment record.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. He's not doing anything else. There's no time issues. There's no obligations he has to be at. He doesn't have to do anything other than unload these. And that's what they do. There's a line of cattle trucks, and this is just simply waiting in line. The real consequence here is a cow in a pen in a confined space. Why does he have to enter that? He doesn't. Because the cow's going to loop up and loop right back out and eventually follow the rest of the herd, literally. So, Cardenas was the hay case. And that goes to the direct negligence claim, because they make that argument there. But Cardenas was the part of that case that survived on the general negligence, and the court called it straight negligence, was that the hay company stacked the hay. And the allegation was you stacked it too high, you stacked it too unevenly, and that was the direct negligence. Here we don't have any allegations. This is strictly a premises case. It's a condition and the activity, and that's what they take issue with on us. To close with the restatement, illustration number 5, in looking at that, it says the only approach to work is over the waxed and slippery stairs. The only alternative, that's a quote, to taking the risk was to forego employment. And simply that's just not the case. The issue about the uncontroverted facts, that really goes to the same issue on the open and obvious and on the blind alley. The there really aren't uncontroverted facts that weigh against us, because what they want to say is, again, which the court pointed out, well, this is a blind alley, and so we didn't have that in the case, and so it's a controverted fact and it wasn't weighed in our favor. But again, it only goes right back to what we say, and it proves the open and obvious part of it. There are no facts that are in dispute. They haven't been able to assert any that say that he's not experienced, that he didn't know. Their expert says, did Creekstone have any superior knowledge over Mr. Gates? No. And so any of the facts, and I don't mean to be critical of the appellant's position, but like most summary judgment cases, well, if we assert facts, well, these are facts and they're weighed in not in our favor, so we should reverse it. But there are no material facts. And I think the important part of that is, if their reasoning is adopted, then we are indeed the insurer of a visitor, even if they know about the danger. And if that was the law, we'd have case law that said, you have a danger, if you can anticipate someone will incur the risk, you're the insurer, you're responsible. But the law doesn't say that. Our case law doesn't say that, and the restatement doesn't. And what does the restatement say? It's comment E, which is essentially the rule again. Then comment F talks about the exception, and it gives those illustrations. And 1 through 4 are talking about distraction, and there's no issue about distraction here. And then illustration number 5 is the only hope that they really have, which again is, does the risk outweigh the alternative? And they can't survive that. And if the law is what they say it is, you wouldn't have illustration number 5. You would just simply say, you work in an office, there's a wax floor, if you notice it, even though it's open and obvious, you walk across it. And the premises owner is responsible, and you wouldn't look at the examination about, is it their only employment, do they forego it by making that choice? And that's why we win. That's why we prevail in this case, because it's open and obvious, there's no exceptions. The court properly addressed the one issue, which was this is a premises case, it's not a general liability case. And then the genuine issue is a material factor, just like any other negligence case. We could have a trial, and we'd have a long list. You know, we would put on witnesses, and we'd try it for a few days and answer some fact questions, but not any that matter, not any that reflect or bear on the outcome of this case.
Thank you, counsel. Within 5 days, I think you gave us a new site, Manly, that I don't think was mentioned in the red brief. Do you mind, within 5 days, giving us, again, without any argument, the site to Manly that you've alluded to?
Yes, Your Honor. Very well. Thank you.
Thank you. And that is, I think, the appellant is out of time. Is that correct?
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you. It was well presented. This matter will be submitted.